Welcome to The Colorcast, a show about color grading, color science, and post-production. We are the Coloristos. I'm Jason Myris, a colorist and post-production engineer in Los Angeles.
And I'm Juan Salvo, a colorist and online editor in New York City.
And I'm Josh Petock, a colorist in Los Angeles. And this week we are talking about DCPs, the idea behind them, doing theatrical releases digitally instead of with film. And it's something that people have been asking us about for a while now, I'd say, right, guys? Yeah. It's a pretty hot topic. And I mean, the idea that you could do a theatrical release without doing a film out is just pretty amazing too.
Yeah. It's something that's like changing the entire industry. Like, well, basically film is as a distribution format is dead or certainly it's like in a coma right now. and the future is definitely, I mean, the studios love it. Indies love it. Theater owners are maybe not that crazy about it because it means they have to buy a lot of gear. But from the content creator's perspective, it's a great initiative because it means you have very, very low cost ability to replicate your feature. So you can go from a very small scale distribution to a very large scale distribution very easily because it's just copying a hard drive. And it also means that you have some standardization for how your film is supposed to look when it's being projected.
Right. I mean, this whole thing was put together by the Digital Cinema Initiatives, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So the whole point of this was so that you could go into any theater in the world, as long as it was a DCP, it should look exactly the same in each of those theaters.
It should look exactly as you intended. So there's very strict, right. The DCI standard has very strict guidelines for how the display is supposed to look, the brightness of the screen, what gamma is supposed to be displaying, where the colors are supposed to sit, and everything that's contained within the DCP, it should fall within those specifications so that it will be displayed correctly. Obviously the only issue is, you know, how good your exhibitors are about actually sticking to the display standard, but whether or not they're supposed to do it isn't up for debate. There's a very strict standardization for how the image is supposed to be displayed.
Right.
And I have to say, by and large, the venues are actually very, very good about staying within the standard.
Yeah. And it seems like it's been really accelerated quite a bit. I think there's two big angles that have sort of made things move along more quickly recently. There's the idea that a lot of finishing is now being done by people other than very large post houses. So the market has actually expanded. And then on the theater end, a lot of the major, production companies or film studios are basically saying, look, we're not going to send you film anymore, like you were kind of saying, Juan. So it's this idea that you need to know about DCPs and equip your theater for it. And so with that, we've got both ends, the people creating DCPs as well as the theaters are all sort of revving up for it.
The one cool thing that I've heard a lot about too is more and more festivals are picking this up as their idea of how, because I mean, if somebody was going to go to a film festival, the chances that they were going to make a film out was rarer, right? I mean, this is huge for them.
I'll tell you another segment this is huge for is like independently produced features, like documentary specifically. It used to be that if you wanted to qualify for Academy consideration, you had to make a print of your film. And this was very frequently cost prohibitive for independent producers that weren't going to have a big distribution. Now they can make a much lower cost DCP and have that qualify for Academy consideration. So it's really opening up the possibility for award considerations for some films that wouldn't have been considered otherwise.
So this is really like a disruptive thing for the business. I mean, I hadn't really thought about that until just now, but it really is.
Yeah, it's a big change. And it's one of those things where it's like, it truly is kind of democratizing the business. Now there's a downside to exhibitors, like exhibitors or maybe especially independent theater owners are not that thrilled about this because as of now, we haven't seen the democratization and the lower cost projectors really in the market, and we haven't seen the cost for the DCP playback systems really drop down significantly. So that's still a big expense for theater owners. Is, you know, it's going to cost between $80,000 and $100,000 to convert a screen from 35 to DCP.
Right. Doesn't that mean, though, that they're going to have a lot more content to provide as well?
Yeah, and it also means that it's more scalable. So they can, if a film isn't working, they can get a DCP sent to them for some other film. They can switch out the movie that they're playing very easily. Like, it gives you a lot of flexibility, but it's still like a big expense for, you know, a mom and pop, especially in like small towns, smaller markets. You have like mom and pop owned movie houses, and for them, it's, you know, it's almost like a whole reinvestment in their business, because it's a significant amount of money. Now, the hope is that there are projector options that are coming out that may be much more cost effective, that may serve that market. So, you know, I'm looking at you, Red. Let's see that Red laser come out. Other.
You can expect all three of us to be in the Red Bay next year at NAB going, right. Okay, what does this Red Ray look like? And are you shipping it?
Well, not just Red Ray.
I'm sorry. What is the Red projector called?
Red Laser.
Red Laser. That's what it is. Yeah. Right.
Red Ray is their kind of their competitor to DCP. So Red Ray is their own codec and their own container format for distribution. Red Laser is their projector product, which they did say would ship this year, although that seems to be their kind of pushing back that claim, as is usually the case with well, not just Red, but a lot of manufacturers. Over announce and under deliver. So right. We'll see what happens there. But I mean, but they're not the only ones that are rumored to be working on more cost effective 4K projector products.
I think Christie actually showed something at IBC that people were really impressed with, some sort of early form of their own laser based projection system, I think.
Yeah. And I've heard like Sony's maybe working on something, or even Kodak had some laser tech they were demoing at some point. But again, you know, all this is just speculation because these are not announced products yet. So, but the Red Laser is an announced product. It's just not a shipping product. And they did say they were targeting like that $10,000 price point for it as kind of the entry, which would be like, that would be basically 1/4 of the lowest cost entry in this field. So that would be a big market changer.
The thing too, one, regarding what you were talking about with small independent theaters, especially the mom and pop theater. Actually, you know, DCP is popular enough. There's a number of people who have, you know, written blogs about it. So you've got the Film Bakery that came out with their article, but Danny Lacey also did a nice article. And a really fun thing he did was he went and took his DCP to a local theater and he was able to get it shown. And it was kind of inspiring, you know, to see him, you know, making an open DCP project. It was his first attempt and boy, it went up on the theater and it all looked great. And so everybody sort of, I think, probably got a boost from that. But the funniest thing is that when he went into the projection booth, they had a film projection system, and it was directly next to their, I guess it was probably a Dolby cinema server they had, as well as their digital projector. And the film projector was from the 60s. And they were like, we love this thing. It's perfect. It isn't broken. It works just like it did the day we got it. It's very, you know, as the girl said, who was the projectionist, it's very keen for upgrading. And so they've been slowly, you know, massaging it into place with, you know, as the decades go by. And now all of a sudden, something that I think a lot of mom and pop shops sort of adored, which was their projector, sort of the heart of their theater, is about to get replaced. And I think, if anything, definitely DCP is a necessary step forward. But I think there's a little bit of romance that some theaters are starting to say, you know, our old girl, we're going to have to retire her. And I think they're looking at that as being sort of a change of, you know, guard.
I think there's a little bit of romance in general for film. You know, we have this kind of nostalgic feel about its analog and graininess, and it's, you know, the qualities of film. And we're always trying to like find ways to make digital images look more filmic. You know, we're always talking about, us colorists, we're always talking about kind of a cinematic grade or whatever. And so I think there is that nostalgia. I think as we get further away from it, I think we'll, in terms of time, I think we'll also get open up the aesthetic a little bit and start kind of exploring other aesthetics for the work that we do.
Yeah, you can't get the blue screen of death on you can't get the blue screen of death on film.
On film, right. Well, you know what's funny, actually, talking about the exact aspect. So I was listening to the Q&A podcast, which is really nice. It's a gentleman who interviews a lot of writers and filmmakers about their filmmaking process. And they were describing this idea of reviewing the DCP in their DI after all the grading was done. And the gentleman who was speaking was talking about they can do this split screen situation in a DI theater where they show you the file directly out of the grading system, and then they show you the DCP, and then they'll do a split screen with the master negative, which is kind of interesting. And he was like, you know, I saw the DCP. It was crisp. It was perfect. It didn't do anything wrong. It was pretty much flawless. And then they put the master negative up, and I was, you know, I was happy. I could tell it was film. I saw some grain. It was a nice angle. And then they showed one of the, you know, first duplicates. And I guess, you know, after all the inner negative and everything, a distribution copy. And the distribution copy, when they showed it next to the DCP, had jitter and flutter, and it was a little bit cranky, and it was weird. And he's like, there's my movie. He's like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a first generation was better than the DCP or the original master, you know.
Wow.
So,
yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's just like we've been looking at, we've literally spent our whole lives, I guess, because, you know, we've been watching films. I've been watching films in theater since I was, you know, 3 years old, 4 years old, right? And so we've been spending our whole lives watching things that were sort of imperfect. And we've learned to value that imperfection as something better than a flaw, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and, the whole reason why we're working 24 frames, right?
Right.
It's like,
and, well, now people are, of course, up in arms about the idea of going 48 frames for The Hobbit because it looks strange because we're so used to seeing 24 frame. But I mean, you make aesthetic choices in filmmaking all the time. We, you know, filmmakers make choices about what kind of when they're working in film, what kind of stock they're going to use, what digital camera they're going to use, or how they're going to shoot it, or how they're going to light it. And I think we'll start to see a shift in what aesthetic choices are being made in the DI process, away from something that looks strictly like a film, like on 35, to something that looks more and more like something else, something broader, because we'll have the capability of doing something that goes beyond that. And that's one of the advantages of DCP. It supports XYZ color space, so it can do a very it can contain a very, very broad range of intended output values, right?
Now, do they use XYZ color space to have a more efficient compression? Is that the reason why XYZ color space is used?
No, I think it's to basically, it's future-proofing it. So it's basically, XYZ color space allows you to go even beyond the visible range of colors. It's the broadest possible space within which to define colors. So you can, there's, you know, as new, you know, we've seen this in the consumer market, as new display technologies have gone out, the NTSC gamut or even the 709 gamut seems limited because we have a lot of displays that are capable of much bigger gamut than that. The OLED screens are capable of a much bigger gamut than even P3 and or some displays are. And so with XYZ, you're actually able to define colors outside of that gamut, even though the DCI spec calls for P3 gamut and 2.6 gamma. That doesn't mean that the container itself, that XYZ container wouldn't be able to go outside of it. It actually is capable of going outside of that gamut.
So I will actually admit something. I have never, ever created a DCP. I'm pretty much a broadcast guy. So I'm happy that Juan is on here to talk about all of the things that he's gone through in his experience to make a DCP as well.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I think this is a good segue into we've talked about kind of the philosophy behind the DCP, why it's good for the industry. And maybe we should talk a little bit about the actual tools that are in play, because there's a lot of DCP creation tools available.
Right. Even an After Effects plugin, apparently.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool one. You know, there's a ton, and they range from, there's a couple of free options even. There's some sort of half free options, which give you some functionality for free. And then there's the more expensive sort of paid solutions that extend, you know, into the tens of thousands of dollars for some of the solutions. And they range in features from everything up to, you know, something that basically works faster than real time or real time and you know, in the highest quality on the stuff they're using to make, you know, the Harry Potter DCPs, all the way down to things that are free and will run on somebody's laptop at home and let you make your own DCP.
So one of my questions was, what system do you use to create a DCP? Like, do you spend your money on processors? Do you spend your money on GPUs? What hardware is going to accelerate that process?
So the vast majority of the lower cost and the free DCP encoders, they actually just use CPUs. There was a push to use GPU a while back. I think EasyDCP was trying to develop a GPU-based JPEG 2000 encoder, and that's sort of fallen away in priority, just as CPUs have gotten faster, and also as the JPEG 2000 encoding has gotten more efficiently written. We should talk a little bit about what the process is. So, you know, when you're grading, if you're grading a theatrical release, you're probably going to be grading in P3 space, or even if you're grading in 709 space, like you do, Josh.
Right.
You know, you do your grade and you master just as you normally would, and that's all done in RGB space. So the regular red, green, blue colors and whatever bit depth you're using, usually 10 bit or something. But basically, mastering your RGB space just as you normally would, and then, you know, some people are doing these DCP in houses. Sometimes you go out of house to do the DCP. You know, this is kind of the same as if you're making a Blu-ray or something else where you're having somebody else do the delivery aspect of it. You have to coordinate with whoever's doing your delivery to determine what's best to deliver to them. So there is a standard called a DCDM format. It's a digital cinema delivery master. And the DCDM format specifies XYZ color space, P3 gamut, 2.6 gamma in a TIFF file as a container and at 16-bit depth. So that's the DCDM standardization. There's also frame size standardizations for that. So it's either going to be 2K or 4K image.
Like, for instance, you could render out of that format in Resolve.
Yeah, very easily. In fact, there's a preset for it that'll do the XYZ conversion, everything else.
Well, one thing I would say, for a project that I'm about to grade in about a week, it's a red project that's going to go to festivals. They asked me about DCP, and one of the things that I think surprised them a lot was the conversation about flat versus scope, and that DCP frame sizes aren't necessarily frame sizes that people are used to. And actually, Juan helped me out with this early on about a month or two ago. I was doing my early investigations for this. So, like, Juan, as the person who has this most internalized, describe to people exactly what is it 1998 is, and why that is foreign but common.
Well, it actually has to do with film format. So, you know, and theaters too, because theaters, you know, you mat the screen to whatever aspect ratio you're showing. So if you're, you know, some screens are set up for scope, and so they have a kind of a wider mat, and they can bring in they can basically bring in the edges or lift the top and bottom in order to go to like a 185 configuration. So 35 flat is a 185 aspect ratio, but, you know, HD is 178. So there's a little bit of a difference there. And in the, when they were defining the DCI specs, they basically said, let's define the image sizes that we're going to support to match the image sizes that the 35 millimeter projectors support, so they wouldn't have to put in a new screen or new matting into the screen. They could just use the existing matting. So they came up with two different standards, which is one is the flat standard, which is the 1998 by 1080 in the 2K spec, which is the basically, if you're mastering in HD and you're trying to make a DCP, what you're going to do is basically add blanking in order to fit that flat standard. And then there's the scope standard, which is like 2K across by, I think it's like 834 or something. I think
it's 858, right now, having just
858.
Yeah, 858. And so it's interesting, right? You know, because people hear these frame sizes and they're so used to HD, and they really, it requires some explaining for a lot of people. So
Yeah, and it just has to do with the difference in aspect ratio between the 35 standard and the HD standard, which is, I mean, it is different, unfortunately, and so you end up with this little discrepancy. And the easiest thing to do, I mean, if you're making an HD mask and you're trying to make a DCP, the easiest thing to do is just add blanking to fill it out to the 185 for the container.
And is that something that the DCP encoder takes care of?
Yeah, they can. So, and this is why you need to communicate with, I mean, whether you're doing it out of house or if you're doing it in house, you need to decide internally how you're going to do it. But if you're doing it out of house, then you need to communicate with whoever's doing your DCP encoding. Or they'll usually give you a spec sheet for what they want delivered. But basically, you want it delivered to what they're expecting so that nothing else goes wrong. But, you know, one thing you don't want to be doing is adding double blanking because that's just going to mess it up. Ideally, you're just delivering. Like if somebody comes to me with a job that was mastered in 709 and wants me to make a DCP, I'll just ask for the highest quality 709 master. So usually like an SR tape or a ProRes 4x4 file or something.
So Juan, real quick, is it common for people to bring you projects? I mean, I guess the answer is probably going to be yes to this, but is it common for people to bring you projects where they haven't thought at all about the DCP and then you're needing to sort of shoehorn their project into the best sort of possible format for a DCP? I mean, is that something that's easy to overcome, or do they pay a penalty for not thinking about the DCP delivery from the beginning with the format they shoot in?
No, I mean, I don't think it's something you necessarily pay a penalty for, other than maybe in what you potentially end up with. So, you know, there's some advantage to sort of grading in P3 space, and that you can push things a little bit more. They're going to look a little bit differently if you actually grade in that space and deliver for DCP. But you know, that's a,
what about the blanking, I guess, you know, so if you add blanking and then they project this, is it going to be obvious up on the screen that there are bars sort of making their format?
really,
that's
depends
the big
on
one. You know, when they see it on the screen and it's at the film festival, what are people going to be possibly surprised by if they didn't think about the DCP?
I've never seen a complaint about this. I think most facilities are clever enough to know that they're seeing a lot of this one. So they're clever enough to kind of bring the mat in a little bit if they can, to kind of make up that blank, and they usually have a preset for it. But I haven't seen a lot of complaints about the issue with the additional blanking. I've even done that, the same technique, delivering for film print. So I've done film prints where we added blanking on the left and right side, and it was not really noticeable. So it worked out really well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other point, too. We were talking about this earlier, is how you QC these. Do you just take it into a theater? I know that there are certain players that you can get. They're fairly expensive.
Yeah, I think the cheapest one, there's one from a company in Australia that's got like a little software player. These are fine for like, you know, basically just being able to check that what you have is doing what you expect it to do. But it's, you know, these software players are not, I wouldn't call them very good QC devices, just because some of them don't check for the proper structure of the DCP. So they're not even checking the DCP structure. They're just playing back the MXF file. And some of them don't do the color space conversion. So they're just showing you an XYZ. And so you're not really looking at it. And then the other issue is that all of them are just displaying it on a computer screen, which you know, it's very hard to sort of be able to judge whether the image is correct on a computer screen, because, you know, it's on a Windows machine. Windows has all kinds of issues with, honestly, the levels get kind of screwy on within the display, whether you're using their, what API you're using, whether you're using DirectX or whatever else to do the display. So there's so many factors involved and so many potential problems that, you know, it's not a great method for QCing. I do have a software player that I use just to basically pop on the DCP and be able to check that when it works, so that it just makes sure that it does make sure that the structure is correct. And then I also just use it to check that all the audio tracks that I expect to be there are there, and that the whole content is there and the reels aren't. Because sometimes I do work with reels sometimes, and you sometimes have to trim the leader from the reels. So I just want to be able to check and make sure that the trim is happening correctly and there's no frames being skipped and the program is there. And so that's a good way to check that, but it's not something I would use to like really QC the image quality.
Which player are you using, Juan? Which one?
This is the easy DCP player, from,
From is it Fraunhofer, right?
Yes.
The German company. What would you say the minimum professional level of QC, you know, is? I mean, is it really the idea that you'd have an honest to goodness do re mi player or a Dolby player and a real, you know, projection theater? Is that the only way to really get it done, or are there ways to make it happen without that?
At this point, that's really the only way to get it done. So I'm just using the software player just to basically verify the content, verify that it's all there. But I wouldn't call that a QC of the actual device. Now, what you can easily QC and what I do QC is the steps before that. So if I make a DCDM master, I'm able to review the DCDM master, for example, in Resolve and play it out through the projector and just have to convert the color space. But I'm able to just verify that that master is correct.
Right, because then at that point, you're not relying on the DCP to change anything. You're just feeding it something to rewrap. Is that correct?
Exactly. Okay. So basically, while you're doing the JPEG 2000 conversion compression, which unfortunately Resolve doesn't read right now, but if it did, it'd be great. But yeah, basically, you're just doing a JPEG 2000 compression, which is a very efficient compression, works really, really well. And then that's getting wrapped into an MXF container.
Cool. So what are some of the gotchas that you have run into over your experience doing DCPs?
The biggest gotcha is definitely the color space issue. So that's where I think it's safe to say if you're doing your first DCP, you're going to mess up the color space conversion. It's pretty much guaranteed to happen. That's the biggest gotcha is making sure that you're... most people are working in 709, so making sure that 709 matrix is being converted correctly, making sure that the gamma is being adjusted correctly. So if, whether you're graded in 2.2 or 2.35 or 2.4, that it's being correctly converted for the 2.6 gamma of the DCP.
One of the things that in my research that I noticed too that was interesting is you have to copy these over to a Linux formatted hard drive as well.
The official delivery specs is basically a hard drive that's formatted to the extended 2 Linux format.
Cool. Yeah, I always see this obviously through the lens of broadcast as well. And some of these things seem like they offer options that will improve the delivery of TV shows too. So I'm really excited to see if something like this really takes off with cinemas as a standard. I'd like to see where that's going to go with broadcast as well.
Yeah, it would be great if we had like one delivery standard for broadcast. I think Avid was mentioning that they've adopted
AS02.
Right, JPEG 2000 ASCO2, because they see it as a potential sort of delivery standard and I think one of the reasons they added it was because HBO was kind of shifting towards that. Right. So they may be one of the sort of the outlets that lead the charge in terms of some kind of delivery master format. It would be a nice idea, you know, it's especially because like something like DCP, which is defined in a very, very broad way, gives you a lot of sort of future proofing. And so it would be nice to see something on the broadcast side that that does something similar. Because there is, you know, we're looking at the possibility of having a 4K broadcast standard down the line. You know, we've added like 3D support to some broadcast channels are broadcasting in 3D. So all of these things could be sort of accounted for in a mastering format.
One of the big questions I have, one is, it seems like, you know, where you sort of separate the men from the boys in a lot of this is with the KDM encryption.
Oh, yeah.
So where do you sort of feel the requirement for people who want to make DCPs is to even worry about that?
Sure.
What do you need to do KDMs correctly, both financially and with regard to the skill required to make that happen correctly?
So KDM is one of those things where you really do have to go for the paid solutions. There aren't any working. There's somebody's got a demo showing like basically a proof of concept showing open source KDM success. Let me back up a little bit. Let me say this: when clients come to me and say I want to make a DCP, for independent distribution, I generally recommend against creating a KDM. It's an additional level of security. So a KDM basically is a key delivery message. Yeah. So what it does is it, you know, when you make a KDM DCP, it encrypts all the content of the DCP. And then it creates a certificate that is tied to that DCP. And then basically you create a delivery certificate for each individual player that you want to be able to play back that DCP that can define a set of time that the DCP can be played for and specific hardware devices that are able to play it. So this is it's a security measure for the studios, because if you're making a DCP for the new Batman, The Hobbit, and you make that DCP weeks and weeks and weeks before the film comes into theaters, you don't want that DCP falling into the wrong hand, because you're talking about a 4K master quality version of the movie that they could make Blu-rays from, they could encrypt, like somebody could really kind of basically rip the whole movie from you. If they had access to that DCP, and these DCPs are being distributed all over the place. So you use these keys to basically secure the content so that it can't be played back except for on the specific device at this specific time. And it works really well, except that it has a few quirks. If your server dies and you need to switch the server, you have to call the distributor and say, I need a new KDM for this specific server, because that's specific server would not be authorized to play it otherwise. And you need to be able to have an internet connection basically to check the server against the time and also get the certificate from the server. It's really complicated, as I'm sure you guys can hear. So
yeah, but I see so many opportunities for social hacking in that too. Oh, our server died. I'm going to need a new file to this Hotmail address.
Well, that's the beauty of it, is even if they give you a new file, there's a list of the there's companies that actually keep a master list of what theaters have which servers. So, and right. Then they keep those certificates. So they can basically check against that list and say you have it or you don't have it. Two, even if you did have it, it wouldn't allow it, the only thing it allows you to do is play it back. So the content itself is still encrypted. So you wouldn't be able to do anything other than play it on that particular device. But it's maybe too secure in that, particularly for independent distributors, it's inconvenient more often than it's helpful. If you're doing if you're screening your film at a festival, and as happens in festivals a lot, they switch the theater that it's being displayed in at the last minute. It's a lot more hassle on that small scale on these large scale distributions, it's easy enough to have somebody on staff all the time to deal with the DCP issues, which is what like Technicolor basically offers as a service. They deal with the DCP KDM issues for you, and they have somebody on staff handling it all the time. They have a whole department for it. It's a lot harder as a small distribution or somebody going to festivals to have that kind of support and have that capability and be able to be sure that your DCP is going to play back if you have these restrictions on it. So for those kinds of use cases, I actually recommend doing an unencrypted disk. I think it's a more efficient way of handling these things, because it just means that anybody that has that disk can play it back, basically.
All of these things seem to spell a win for the studios, which is why I think that these DCPs are really going to start to catch on.
Yeah, for them, there really is not a downside. Lower cost, more scalability, and more security.
I mean, one of the things that seems interesting, though, is that, you know, definitely seems like a good, robust format that has it has the future in mind. At the same time, you know, with complexity comes expense. So to a certain degree, the complexity of, say, the KDM creation or even managing it at the theater level means an expense. And with the splintering, I guess the democratization of everything, there's going to be an interesting angle if there are vendors out there, as in companies who make solutions, that are able to find ways to let DCP be DCP with all of its gotchas, but also allow smaller theaters, independent theaters, mom and pop places to handle it at an efficient level, you know, because there's already news about it with, say, Brian De Palma's New York Film Festival difficulties and so on and so forth. So even at that level. So
yeah, that's an example of, there's a Brian De Palma, that's a good example of a KDM basically that failed. And so that's, I mean, it could have been like, there are so many places where it could have screwed up. But somebody making the certificate might have set it for the wrong day, so the certificate didn't work at that particular screening. They might have switched the projector or the server at the last minute and ended up with something that wasn't authorized. There's a lot of places where those things can go wrong. And so it's not foolproof.
I guess, one, since you've been through most of these products, or at least a number of them, from open source to the moderate cost solutions all the way out to the very expensive, what are some of the products you've had the best success with, or maybe not?
Well, I'll say, you know, there's the open source solutions, which a lot of people are using. There's like Open Cinema Tools, and then OpenDCP. Is that the other one?
Yep, OpenDCP.
I did early on play around with Open Cinema Tools, and I had some issues, and those issues actually related to something else that's happened, which is there's been a shift in the standard from DCP, from using the interop format, which is particular format for the DCP. We haven't touched on this at all, but I'm just letting you guys know. So now we use the SMPTE standard for the DCP. And so during that period, there were issues where some players weren't supporting SMPTE and some players weren't supporting interop anymore. And so there was some funkiness because of that changeover. And so that's been clarified a little bit. I think my biggest concern with recommending the OpenDCP and the open source solutions in general, the free solutions, is that they are like a lot of open source software. They have a lot of functionality that's been added by the community, but they also have a lot of potential traps. And so you do need to have a lot of expertise, and you really, with the open source solution, you really got to be able to check it at a theater and see that it's right, and not trust anything until you're able to verify that, because there's so many places where you can kind of mess it up, or things can be a little bit off and you can end up with something that doesn't work. So if you don't have the ability to verify, I don't recommend using the free solutions. The next step up from that, I think, is actually a really big step up, which is that Magna Mana, or I think is the name of the company.
You got it. Yeah, close enough.
And they have a product called Final DCP, which I actually really like. I did some comparisons, actually tests a while back, between a few different encoding solutions, and I was really, really impressed with their JPEG 2000 encoder. I'm really impressed with their software. I think it's a really nice UI, and it's a very robust piece of software. In fact, they just had an update a week ago that added a bunch of really cool functionality, like the ability to basically manipulate the input gamma, so you can define basically the transform. So if you're dealing with something that's been graded in 709 space, you're able to basically bring it in, look at it, you know, in a preview window, and look at the way it's going to look on the output, and then adjust the gamma input and adjust the level input between full and legal, and the transforms between 709 or P3 or some other choices. So that's a really cool feature, and it also allows you to set compression settings per reel. So you can, in a DCP, you can have as many reels as you want. Basically, you can make a DCP that is just each scene is its own reel, even. And so one handy trick you could use is basically to break up your movie into, if you have a movie like, for example, let's say, take an example of like one of those short film anthologies, like I Love New York or Paris, Je T'aime. You can break those up into their component films by reel, and then tweak the encoding settings, you know, give a little bit more bandwidth to a film that has a lot of grain, for example, or a little more efficient compression for something that is very clean. You can tweak those settings per reel, and that's a really handy feature. So that I'm really impressed with that device. I think it's, to my mind, it's pretty much the go-to solution now. It's also cross-platform, so it's on Windows and Mac. It's pretty much the go-to solution for a non-encrypted DCP. So if you're not making an encrypted DCP, that's a really great choice. If you need to make encrypted DCP, the lowest cost solution is really the ECDCP. which we talked about earlier, and they have a KDM encrypted version, which is a little bit more expensive than their regular version, and that makes a very, very standardized DCP. So they're very good about actually delivering something that one supports KDM properly, and that's more tricky than you would like to think, unfortunately, and actually does it really well. So those are my sort of my three kind of market recommendations, and none of those are oppressively expensive. So, but none of them are necessarily real time either. You can set up configurations with those that are going to be faster or slower depending on your system configuration. I think the final DCP even supports like a cluster processing, so you can set up multiple machines in a very you know, high-end solution where you have a NAS or a SAN sharing media. You can set up a cluster and have it process across multiple machines for faster than real-time processing.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a nice breakdown. I mean, I guess overall, it seems like, if anything, there's a lot of options that are coming out, even given the good selection of options that are out now. So, you know, in the next year or so, there'll probably be either improvements to what's available, and then from there, even new products.
Yeah. I mean, there's like Mist and some other ones have like DVS Clipser also does DCP, but Mist has like built-in DCP creation. There's a few solutions that are coming out with, you know, I think we may see, and Josh, you brought this up maybe in an earlier episode, the idea of you may see the DCP delivery as part of the grading suite. You know, you may see that as just like another render option, delivery option, instead of a QuickTime, you render out a DCP.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Would be great. Yeah.
Well, that's happening on a couple different fronts, I guess. Rain and Mist are doing it. I believe that Mystica has a really nice DCP option. Scratch right now, Assimilate, is in the middle of developing a DCP plugin, so that'll have it soon. And I think as that becomes more standard, anybody that is behind will catch up, knowing that it's an important new feature.
That's true.
You know, it's important to note, I think one of the reasons why this is possible is because DCP is an open standard. Anybody can make software that creates a DCP. Everything that goes into a DCP is open source and available and can be accessed for free. There's nothing proprietary or locked about DCP, even though it's encrypted. I think that's a great precedent to set for the industry. I hope that gets adopted in a lot of other places too. I think it's always good for everyone when we all have access to the tools, as opposed to just the people that get the licensing fee.
Yes.
Get access to the tools.
DaVinci help at blackmagicdesign.com. Just email them if you want to see that feature in there, because I'm sure
they are
listening. This is why I love doing this podcast, is because whenever I talk to you guys, I actually learn a lot about something that I never knew anything about, which is honestly the DCP. I did do some research on it, but it's always awesome to hear directly from people that are using it. So thanks to you guys for cluing me in too.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll have some people get a lot out of this, because I think DCP is an important thing that people are going to want to be able to do. And hopefully this is at least the start. So maybe we even have a podcast, you know, more in depth in the future.
Yeah. I think you guys also see this. I get a lot of questions about DCP. I think there's a lot of interest about it. And then there's also a lot of confusion, because it is a complicated topic. So hopefully this is a good primer for people. It's just kind of an entryway into understanding it. There's a lot to talk about and a lot to think about. And
post questions in the forum too.
Yeah. I'll go to Lift Cap again and we'll see those questions, and I'll try and respond, and I'm sure you guys will jump in as well.
So in wrapping up, I would say I am Josh Petok. I'm a colorist in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jason Myris, a colorist and post-production engineer also in Los Angeles.
And I'm Juan Salvo, a colorist and online editor in New York City. You can catch me on Twitter, and you can catch all of us at liftgammagain.com. Thanks for joining us.